If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, July 3rd, the Magic Beer Fridge Edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm the dad of Harper, who is 6, and Lyra, who is 9. Allison, my usual co-host, is on vacation this week with her family, somewhere lovely, I'm sure. So I'm joined today in our DC studio by our very special guest host. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Emily Yaffe. I write Slate's Dear Prudence column. And I am the mother of an 18-year-old girl who asked that I not name her, which must say something about my parenting skills. She actually did say, they asked you to do a parenting podcast?
She sounds like a little Prudence indeed, yes. So that was a wise move, young Yaffe child. So good job. Welcome, Emily. I'm so happy to have you here. I'm taking advantage of this opportunity by clearing the decks here in this podcast. We are not going to have an interview this week. I am seizing the chance to talk to dear Prudence about parenting issues that she has faced already and that I, as the parent of younger children, have not faced yet. So today we're going to talk about difficult conversations, how best to prepare kids for the peer pressure that they might face in the middle and high school years. And we'll also talk about an adorable menstruation-related ad that is sweeping the internet, and how families handle the joyous arrival of Aunt Flo. So first of all, though, if you enjoy this podcast, if you enjoy Mom and Dad Are Fighting, please tell your friends. Send an email, tell them in person, host a listening party at your home, whatever. We really want more listeners. And also, if you listening to us are not a human person, but a corporation person, please consider sponsoring us. We want advertisers. Email momanddad@slate.com if you're interested. Second of all, if you're a fan of Slate, you should consider joining our membership program, Slate Plus. You get early access to Emily's Dear Prudence column. You'll get all kinds of great bonus content, including this week, the second installment of Willa Paskin's podcast series about Orange is the New Black. This week, she's talking to Dan Savage about gay and lesbian issues in season 2. That is for members only. It's free to try for 2 weeks. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. Okay, pitch is over. So, as always, if you've got topics you want us to discuss or questions you want to ask, please email us at momanddad@slate.com. If you've got a question that you want us to answer on the air, you can call and leave a message on our voicemail at any time at 424-255-7833. That number again, 424-255-RUDE, which is what I am being by talking so much while Emily is waiting patiently and listening. So let's start with triumphs and fails. Emily, do you have a triumph or a fail this week?
Obviously, I'm going to go with a triumph. This is my only shot here.
Right now, your daughter is going, oh, God.
All right. My daughter just graduated from high school.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. That engenders a lot of gifts. She sat down. She said to me, can you get me the addresses for so-and-so, 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 who has sent me gifts? She sat down with her stationery and wrote her thank you notes. And I heard back from some people she wrote thank you notes to who said, I just have to tell you, your daughter wrote the most charming, funny thank you note. It was so delightful. So I got a thank you for her thank you notes. And she said, and I said, you know, I heard these friends really loved what you wrote. I didn't read it. She just sent it off. And she said, Mom, you just totally drilled into me that if someone does something like that for you, you have to thank them. So triumph.
Wow, that is a huge triumph. One that I have not succeeded with yet because my kids are bad, bad, bad at that. Wow. Okay. Big triumph. Congratulations. Good job. I have a fail. It is not only a parenting fail, but a childing fail, I guess. I got into a dumb fight with my mom in front of Lyra. So my mom was visiting from Wisconsin. We were running late for a birthday party at Tyson's Corner, and I parked in a parking space, and my mom was like, you're way over the line in the other parking space. And instead of just moving the car, which would have definitely been the nice thing to do to the person who's parked next to me, I, like, took offense at being mommed by my mom, and I, like, was a dick to her, basically. Like, I was like, Mom, knock it off. It doesn't matter. Let's just get to the party. Stop it. You're being a pain. And, like, right in front of my own daughter, who was, like, watching us, like, wow, my dad has a mom. And so I guess it was maybe a revelatory moment for her. But, like, I you know, I talk to Lyra all the time about being – how important it is to be kind to people, especially people in your own family. And then I was just like a passive-aggressive, annoying jerk to my own mom right in front of her. So I felt like that was kind of a big fail. Lyra mostly seemed bemused. Like, she didn't seem, like, shocked or anything. I mean, weirdly, she's seen me be a dick before, apparently. But so my mom listens to this podcast, I think. So sorry, Mom. I should have just moved the car.
I think that what happened is an absolutely great opportunity to talk to your daughter about it and say, okay, I'm not so different from you. And although we hold up high standards for you, we want you to meet them. Everyone's human. And there's something about when parents tell you to do something, you lose it. I lost it.
Yep. That would be a good way to turn this fail into a modest triumph. Maybe I will try to do that. That's good advice. Thank you. All right, so our first topic today, in a recent post on her blog, Momastery, the author and public speaker Glennon Melton wrote about a conversation with her tween son about what to say when he is in a dangerous or uncomfortable situation. I was struck by this conversation, Emily, and I wanted to talk about it today. Melton writes on her blog, "Yes, we spend hours talking to our kids about why to say no, but we don't tell them how to say no. When they are put on the spot, they don't have hours to explain their decisions to their peers. They have a split second. And while our teens and tweens want to make the right decisions, they often want to avoid awkwardness even more. In the absence of a plan, they'll likely default to yes, just like we so often do. Maybe they're not saying yes because they want to rebel. Maybe they really do say yes because they don't know what else to say. They need help knowing and preparing, and that is where we come in." So in this conversation, Melton and her husband worked with their son to prepare some answers to elicit offers ahead of time so that when the time comes, he will be more easily able to say no. So I'll give an example. Emily, offer me some weed.
Hey, Dan, this stuff is so great. You got to try it. You won't believe what it does.
You know, my mom used to smoke pot when she was younger, and now she can smell it from a mile away. She checks my clothes every night, so I can't do it, man. So that was the
I see.
the rebuttal that they came up with together, mm-hmm. like the script that they wrote for this kit. So, Emily, what did you think of the idea of scripting responses to challenging situations like this? Do you think that's a good idea overall?
Yeah, I actually do, because she's right. You say, don't do this, don't do that. But then you're stuck in the moment and I've been there. As you say, you have little kids. I have an 18-year-old. This actually happened when my daughter was 14 and the kids are just starting to go out and gather. So a bunch of friends said, hey, we're going downtown to our little downtown, very safe area to meet at Chipotle. So I dropped her off. She had a cell phone by that time. About half an hour later, she called me. Can you pick me up on the corner of thus and thus streets?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will be right there. I mean, I could tell from her voice. And I drove in, met her, and she said, everyone got to the roof of the restaurant and started smoking pot. And she just had to get out of there. And she was, she didn't say what the conversation was, but, you know, she just said, I got to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing was, we had told her, if you are in an uncomfortable situation, you call us. We don't care what it is. We don't care what time it is. You will not be punished for having gotten in a bad situation. We want you to get out.
All right. So that's great advice. Like, you know, always knowing that you have the outlet to call parents, no questions asked. And much of the advice in this blog post that they gave their son was that, you know, a lot of the answers he gave were, you know, if he's in a drunk driving type situation, his script was, my dad will always pick me up, no questions asked, and we'll never get in trouble for calling even if someone is drunk. And I think that's a great outlet. But so had you practiced any kind of conversational cues with her before that? Do you think that that helped her in that situation, or do you think that she was sort of on her own in that case?
We did, in that I was able to talk about my own experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I have a different take on the whole peer pressure thing, because I was that age in the 70s and everyone was smoking pot. There was a lot of drugs. It was more drugs, really, than drinking.
Right.
And I wasn't interested.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't even remember times where people said, oh, come on, what's wrong with you? If you know, the pot comes to you, you pass it to the next person. No one ever said, hey, why aren't you inhaling?
People were just cooler then, I guess.
I guess. I really think if you have the confidence in yourself to, look, I want to hang out, I just don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said to her, if you just don't want to do it, just say no thanks. You don't even have to get in a dialogue. And the person who's, if you do get pressured, that person's a jerk. You can just walk away. No, really, I don't want to.
It's true. I mean, but I feel like sometimes I feel stuck between these two ideas. The notion that if someone is a jerk, you can just walk away, and it's not that hard to do that if you really have self-confidence. And my memory of myself as a kid, which I think is different from yours, I was not as self-confident as you, I think, when I was a kid. And if I got in those situations, rarely with drinking or drugs, because I hung out with a bunch of losers and we never even drank or did drugs because we weren't cool enough. But in other like sort of situations of doing dangerous things or doing dumb things or like the pressure to be mean to someone else who maybe didn't deserve it, I didn't find myself easily able to like get out of those situations. Our intern, Laura, did some research on this for us. She found a couple of interesting posts that we'll add to our show page. But one piece of advice that I found really useful that she found that was from a blog post was just a simple reminder to your kids that one thing that they can always say in this scenario, even if you've not scripted out some conversational rubric, is to just ask, well, what's something else that we can do instead? Because kids, as this blogger noted, will often sort of get all into the trap of saying, oh, you know, here are all the bad things that could happen if we do this thing. We could get caught. We could get in trouble. We could be breaking the rules. We could get suspended. And the easy response to that always from a friend is, but we won't get caught. You know, no one's going to see us. We're up on the roof of Chipotle. Nothing's going to happen. And so one response that I really like that I think that I will sort of go through with my kids is to just practice saying, what can we do instead? We're up here on the roof of Chipotle. What can we do instead? We could jump off the roof. No, I guess that's not a great scenario. But you can find alternative things as opposed to just dwelling on the negatives, which are so easy to rebut. But I do take your point, Emily, that there's another scenario that this blog post sort of ignores, right? Which is a potentially more likely scenario for many kids, which is this is a scenario where you're telling your kids how to say no, but you're not really dealing with the very likely possibility that at some point your kids will want to say yes, right? And so there's a whole nother issue here that this doesn't deal with. This is really just a different, more sort of child-friendly and parent-friendly way of getting across just say no. But what do you think, Emily, about this notion that I sort of have that kids maybe should have a little bit of freedom to experiment with these things in high school under, I guess, sort of safe conditions.
All right. I've been there.
Yeah.
Because you're right. You're talking about an age range. You don't want your 14-year-old doing something that you feel kind of differently about your 17 and 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be advocating what I'm saying next because it's illegal. But my daughter is going off to college. The drinking age in this country is 21, which I think I understand why, but I think that's created a whole set of unintended consequences of actually encouraging binge drinking.
Right. Unsupervised binge drinking.
Right, because it's illegal, so it all goes underground.
Right.
You can't, your parents aren't supposed to pour you a glass of wine or have some beer with dinner. I actually think it probably ultimately is safer for end of high school age kids to have some experience drinking because they at least have to go home, assuming you've got attentive parents. If you go home drunk, puking out of your mind, adults are going to notice that you still have eyes on you. There should be some constraints. And the kids can kind of learn, okay, here's what two beers do to me. Here's the difference between a beer and a glass of punch. In looking into the whole campus rape thing, which I've written about.
And which we talked about on a previous episode, in fact.
Absolutely. One through line that I saw is a lot of freshmen, particularly freshman girls, come. This is their first time drinking. They're away from home. There's a punch bowl. It tastes like Kool-Aid. And they have no idea what three big glasses of this. And then someone else says, oh, have a beer. Boom, they're in a blackout state. They have no experience drinking and can get in a lot of trouble. So I think there's something to having been exposed to alcohol. And how are you going to stop it?
Yeah.
There's such a different – when you have a 17 or 18-year-old, when your kid turns 18, as my daughter's reminded me many times – I'm an adult now, Mom. I mean, what are you, going to do? She had a party toward the end of her high school. It was an after-party party. So suddenly our basement is filling up with all these kids. I was having a dinner party upstairs. And suddenly I had the horrific realization we have a refrigerator in the basement. We had had my husband's office Christmas party months ago, and it was filled with the leftover beer and wine from that party. So
right.
We have a magic beer refrigerator in the basement. I text her from upstairs saying, do not let anyone near the magic beer refrigerator. So my daughter says to everyone, hey, everyone, stay away from the magic beer refrigerator. There wasn't so much magic beer in it next day.
Well, it's a totally great point. It is obviously of interest to the parents of girls for very specific, awful campus rape-related reasons. But it's not untrue that for every kid that this is a real issue when you get to college and you're suddenly under no supervision whatsoever. And this is what happened to me when I got to college. I didn't drink at all in high school. And then I got to college and I was terrible at drinking. Like I had no idea how it worked on my body. And so I had a lot of like really bad situations where I got way drunker than I should have because I had no tolerance and no understanding of how it worked. And I also didn't know how to navigate the social aspect of it
exactly.
at all. Like I didn't know how to behave myself when drunk. I didn't know how to behave with other people when drunk. And so I really wished in the end that I had had a bunch of I'd had some drinking experience in high school with people I knew better and trusted better and with parents at home to like clean up the aftermath and help me learn some valuable lessons. Like I think that would have been great. And like I'm not so into the idea of my kids when they're in high school getting super drunk, but I hope honestly, that they have some practice at that age so that when they go off on their own, whether to college or to whatever adult experience they have, this is not the first time that they are having a hard drink or having a beer or having a glass of wine or the God, that horrible punch, as you say. Here's the last point I want to make about this blog post. And about this concept of coming up with conversational cues beforehand. One thing that I walked out of this blog post really thinking is that I think that this could be I think the person who really needs this kind of scripting is a parent. Like, this made me want me and my wife, to sit down and script out some responses that we will have to difficult questions that our kids are going to ask us in the future. Like, I mean, all through, like, when they ask us, like, what do I do when someone's smoking pot? I really could stand to have a conversation with this about Alia before I just start go spouting off some half-cocked bullshit, because I have really complicated feelings about pot in general, and I should think about what I'm going to say before this conversation happens. So that is, like, one thing I took out of this that I think is also valuable.
I totally agree. And knowing I was doing this, actually just yesterday, I had another conversation with my daughter about drinking and drugs. And one of the points, revelatory, she made to me is that when you have some experience drinking, you pretty quickly learn, okay, here's the effect on my body. And two beers are generally going to have this effect, depending on if I've had anything to eat, et cetera. She said her experience with marijuana, it's not – the FDA is not regulating this thing.
Right.
And she told me about a really bad experience with it. And I said, that's the difference with drugs. You just don't know from time to time.
Right.
And I'm not pushing alcohol. But as far as – you're right, talking about having some self-knowledge, that's a big – I think that's an important point to make to kids. But I love your sense of them experimenting in a group of people they really know, because college, especially the first few months, is like a cocktail party that never ends. Everyone's smiling and trying to impress each other, and you don't know who your friends are. And at least in high school, as I say, assuming you got good parents, you got nice, basically nice friends, these friends do look out for each other.
Oh, yeah, way more than your sweet mates and your freshman
because
dorm
you don't know each other.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we want to hear from you listeners. How do you deal with these kind of situations? Have you scripted out conversation cues? Are you reporting us to the police right now because of all the things that we just said? Send us an email, momanddad@slate.com. If you call the police, maybe send the email sooner and give us a heads up so we can clean out the magic beer fridge. All right. Now let's go to our listener call. Last episode, we had a listener call about touching other people's kids as a disciplinary measure from a guy who grabbed a kid's leg to stop him from kicking him on a plane. Today's call from listener Alistair in Manitoba is about touching other people's kids, but with affection. Let's listen.
Hi, guys. My name is Alistair. So I had a discussion with my wife this morning about an incident that happened in front of our son's elementary school that I thought I'd share. Essentially, I dropped off my son, and on my way back to the car where my wife was patiently waiting for me, I ran into one of my son's best friends, who's a five-year-old girl who was there with her mom. And the girl was crying at the time, and so I bent down and I asked her if she was okay, and I asked her if she wanted a hug. So I looked at her mom, and I gave her a hug, and then I stood up and I kissed the top of her head, and her mom smiled, and they went into the school. I got back into the car, and my wife was upset. She saw the whole thing. And she saw me kiss the top of the head. Now, I'm wondering what you guys think. I certainly didn't think that it was inappropriate at the time, and the mother didn't seem to think so. But, I would respect other people's opinions on this, and I'd like to see how other people weigh in. So love the podcast, and let me know what you think. Thanks so much. Bye.
Oh, my God. This is totally fine. This is like a normal thing to do. Am I crazy? Emily, are you looking at me dubiously?
I would say 5 years to life for that.
Poor Alistair. I hope the Canadian prisons are nice.
You know what? I understand the wife's reaction only because, as Dear Prudence, I have gotten letters from single fathers, widowers, or single fathers raising daughters, raising questions like, can I have a sleepover?
Yeah.
My daughter wants to have a sleepover. There, I think what Alistair's wife is reflecting is this generalized terror of men. Men are molesters unless proven otherwise. And how sad that you can't comfort a child you know very well without someone getting scared. Now, the wife was scared. Oh, gee, what if something happened?
Right. Clearly, the wife does not think Alistair is a molester. The wife feels nervous that something will happen
to
him. Yeah, right.
But the mom, I love that Canadian thing, the other mother smiled, so it's all okay.
Right. I feel like this is a case where you have to, like, trust your instincts, right? You don't go around dudes kissing random children on the head on the street, unless you are a politician, in which case apparently it's totally fine. But if this is a kid you know well and the mom is right there, for God's sake, of course you can do that. Like, I just think that's so – that should so self-evidently be fine. And I respect, Alistair, that your wife was worried on your behalf. But, like, anyone who takes offense at this is being an asshole, right? They're totally being an asshole.
Yes. But I'll tell you, when I've written about this, about the sleepover issue with dads – I've gotten two major kinds of responses. One from prosecutors saying, you don't know what goes on. Why would a father want a bunch of little girls over? Then I've heard from defense lawyers saying, never, ever, ever do this, because all it takes is one cracked little kid to make a false accusation and your life is ruined. And to me, this was just absolutely tragic to think.
It's totally
this,
heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, as a dad, I definitely see that and I get slightly nervous about it, but I have, like, made the executive decision that I need to just be a parent like other parents, and hopefully no crazy thing will ever happen to our family.
But agreed.
Like, yes.
And one of my daughter's best friends, her father's a widower. Mm-hmm. My daughter has slept over there innumerable times. I know this man very well. I mean, the idea that anyone would raise a question. I mean, what if your wife died? What you're, you know, off on some island, your daughter can't have friends over? It's insane.
Right. So and so whatever. There are plenty of issues, greater issues than this. But at the very least, out in public in front of the kid's mom with a kid that you know very well, I'm going to definitively say you are allowed to kiss that kid on the top of the head when she is feeling bad and needs comfort. Good job, Alistair. You were being a good friend. Good work. All right. So remember, everyone, if you have a question that you want us to answer on the air, please call. Leave us a message at any time. The number is 424-255-7833. That number again, 424-255-RUDE. All right, on to our second topic today. A recent ad for a period starter kit called Hello Flow is all over my Facebook feed and likely all over yours. In the ad, a girl fakes her first period because she is jealous that her friends have already gotten it. Her mom, who is annoyed that the girl lied about it, throws her a first moon party. The product, Hello Flow, is a sort of starter kit you can order. It is a couple of starter pads. There's discussion guides for parents and kids. The product seems totally normal. The ad struck me as slightly weird. Emily, what did you think about this ad?
Well, first of all, are these parties a thing? Is this like gender reveal parties? Tell me this isn't happening.
Let's get into that in a moment. I can't imagine, but let's talk about the ad for starters. Like, what did you think?
Here, the ad was very cleverly done. The ad, kind of a riff on Arrested Development. Everyone in this family's wacky.
Right.
They're having... Grandpa is bobbing for ovaries. There's a vagician. Dad jumps out of a cake dressed in a red suit. So the ad is, as I say, it's well done. One of the primary things that bothered me about the ad is that this little girl is very snotty, very superior, treats her mom with contempt. And we have enough snotty kids, so just that whole dynamic I hate.
Yes. And the mom was kind of like sort of snotty, too. Like, I did not like the generally antagonistic relationship between this kid and her mom. Like, the mom was kind of a jerk. And so I didn't know exactly what this ad was satirizing. Like, I don't actually think that that many people are really throwing period parties. Honestly, I don't. I think that in most families, this is either a subject of embarrassment or mutual respect, but not like over the top, like moon goddess celebration. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe our listeners will tell me that this is really a thing that people are doing, but I've never heard of such a thing really actually happening anywhere but on the internet where people are crazy. But I guess the idea of the ad, if I have to think about it, and I had to think about it a lot, would suggest it's not actually that good of an ad per se, as much as it is a funny short film, is that it doesn't have to be a big deal. It's satirizing the idea that it has to be a big deal in any direction, in the celebratory direction or in the embarrassed direction, and that there's a much more simple, down-to-earth way to deal with it, which just happens to be available to you and your family for $29.95 through HelloFlow, right? And I guess I am okay with that, but in general, I found the interaction between the mom and the daughter to be super weird. But so this led me to think about, well, this is something that's coming up, right, in my family. My kids are 6 and 9. They have a couple years to go, probably, although in today's era of advanced chemically induced puberty, who can say? But I probably have a couple of years. But I wanted to ask you, Emily, how did you approach this with your daughter? Did you have a big talk about it beforehand? Did it hit you by surprise? Was it a moment of huge embarrassment? Or were you as down to earth and wonderful as I like to imagine you were?
Well, I'm going to tell this story, and this is one of the reasons my daughter did not want her name used.
Young Prudence.
This first came up in a rather traumatic way. My daughter was probably in second grade. I was in the bathroom. We have a loosey-goosey family. Mm-hmm. She throws the door open, walks in, just as I'm removing a very well-used tampon.
Wow.
And she's like, "Mommy, what's happening?"
That's amazing.
Yes. So that prompted a conversation, mm-hmm. and I was able to show her unused tampons, which are much less terrifying, mm-hmm. and kind of started the discussion and said, "You don't have to think about this for quite a while, and by the time you do, you'll be older and more ready." So that was our introduction.
Traumatic, but probably useful. Like, it's a great way to force you to have that conversation, for sure.
So by the time it came, you know, she was thoroughly schooled in it. I also think, you know, there are terrific books mm-hmm. that do the whole what's happening to your body thing. Of course you want to talk to your daughter, but some stuff she just rather read. And we went to the bookstore and looked at a bunch of books. You know, it's helpful to look at the books together. Do you like the tone, the illustrations? And got her a couple of books, which she read on her own, which were also helpful. And of course, they do some of it in school. Mm-hmm. And then the kids are talking to each other. So although her initiation into this idea was traumatic, by the time it happened, it wasn't.
It was like no big deal, basically. Well, that's great. So there's some good advice that that our intern Laura found from Claire McCarthy, who's a pediatrician and mom of girls who writes for the Boston Globe. And I want to run this advice by you, Emily, and see if this was true in your case or whether you think it's good advice. One piece of advice was, don't use the line, "You're a woman now," because she thinks, A, that's not actually that helpful. And B, I...
And they aren't.
And they aren't. Yes, this was exactly my point, right? They're not actually women. Being a woman, just like being a man, does not have to do with getting boners. Being a woman is something totally different than this, right?
Right. And you know what? It's scary because they know they're not women. They're still girls. And as you say, some of them start 10, 11 years old,
right,
which is really, you know, that is kind of a burden when you're that young. So I think it's very important to emphasize you're still a girl.
Right. Okay, so explain the biological facts, but be practical about it. So, like, teach them about pads and teach them about emergency Kleenex and teach them about tampons if they are interested in tampons. What's your thought on tampons for kids? Apparently, some people are totally against it. Is that true?
Oh, my God. They're so liberating. Okay. You have to, as soon as your kid is ready, I really think you have to make that available. Mm-hmm. Depending on your relationship,
right.
I mean, you can get, I got right there in the bathroom mm-hmm. and, okay, let's figure this out. Because mm-hmm. it seems
totally bewildering.
Even if you don't have the equipment, even if you have the equipment, you're like, well, I'm supposed to do what?
Yeah.
And when girls learn how to use tampons, they just feel so much better. Mm-hmm. It really does make it much easier.
Another piece of advice, don't overstress the possibility of cramps and pain. I guess apparently for a lot of girls, that isn't even an issue early in their menstrual lives. What did you like get into that with her? Was that an issue?
It was mm-hmm. because hers were painful. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, all the NSAIDs, the Motrin, Aleve, mm-hmm. et cetera. I mean, when they first came on the market, they were I remember when they were prescription drugs and oh my God, they were lifesavers mm-hmm. for me.
Used to be prescription drugs? You had to like go to your doctor and get.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, what a nightmare.
Yeah. So, you know, I was able to say, take two of these mm-hmm. and you will feel fine.
Mm-hmm. Emily, you asked me when we were discussing topics for our podcast. Is this going to be an issue for you or is your wife, or are you just going to have your wife do it? And I do think that there is like a sort of an overwhelming feeling that this is the kind of issue that dads are happy to just wash their hands of and be like, moms, take care of it. You're all women over there. You deal with it. But like, maybe I will feel differently when the time comes, and maybe more to the point, my kids will feel differently and they won't want me that involved. But I feel like this is a part of parenting and growing up that I should not get a pass for just because I have a dick. Like, that doesn't seem fair to me, and that doesn't seem like the kind of dad I want to be. So I hope that I will be involved. But is that crazy? Are my dreams of this not being awkward and embarrassing just dreams? Are my kids going to be like, Dad, get the hell out of here?
Get back to me on that, Dan, of what your daughters have to say. Although I do always love seeing fathers in that aisle trying to match the directions to the thing they're supposed to buy.
It's adorable. See, I just find that, I have the benefit of we're also a fairly loosey-goosey household, and right now my kids are not particularly ashamed. They have not reached the ashamed of their bodies stage yet, and I know that that goes hand in hand with puberty. And I also know that at some point it becomes healthier for them to have a sense of privacy about their bodies around their father and around people in general, and that becomes like a totally normal thing. But it's still hard for me to imagine a future in which they're going to be ashamed to talk to me about that, because right now they are literally shameless and will talk to me about tons of things where I'm just like, why are we even having this conversation? Like, that's just, it's like sort of like weird that you are explaining to me all the things that you want to tell me about your vagina right now. Like, so it's funny to imagine this alternate future, which surely will come.
I think so. And maybe it's not so much shame as your daughter saying, I realize you just can't know and you don't get
true.
It, Dad.
That's true. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Part of it is that at this point, there's very little about my kids' lives that I don't know everything about or understand. But there is a whole future, obviously, where they will have whole lives separate from me. And that is weird and scary. But I'll get over it.
And I hope, you know, I always think, am I that mother who the other mothers are looking at saying, you have no idea, do you? I know what's actually going on. My daughter's telling me what's going on with your daughter, and you're blithely unaware.
Well, maybe that's probably the case, yes, for all of us. All right. So once again, we want to hear from you, listeners. How have you dealt with this? If you have a daughter, how are you going to deal with this? Dads, I really want to hear from you. If you have great stories to tell me about your kids welcoming you into this conversation with open arms. Emily is making a hilarious face.
I'm making gestures. Yeah. No.
Never, never. Come on. There have got to be families like this out there. I want to hear about it. momanddad@slate.com is the email address. momanddad@slate.com. And that brings us to recommendations. Emily, why don't you go first? What do you recommend this week?
Well, I'm going to recommend, not overwhelmingly, but a mostly positive recommendation.
You're going to lukewarmly recommend.
Yeah. The book by Jim Gaffigan called Dad is Fat.
Okay.
Jim Gaffigan is a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. I actually really enjoy his stand-up. He's got a couple of specials you can see on Netflix. He wrote a book about his experiences as a father. The book came out a year or so ago. At the time he wrote it, he had 5 children, ages 8 through infant. As he said in the book, my wife is so fertile that while she was pregnant, I was worried I got her pregnant. And reading the book, I know you talk a lot, and you talked recently about the trauma and horror of becoming parents. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, I read Jon Krakauer's Into Thin Air about the horrible climb up Mount Everest where a whole bunch of people died. And one of the pleasures of that book was laying in my nice, cozy bed feeling, I am not at base camp. I am so happy.
Yep.
And this book had a similar, I think, for almost anyone, because very few people are going to have 5 young children and live in a 2-bedroom walk-up in New York. So as you're reading his account of this, wherever you are, however overwhelmed you feel, you will feel, oh, I'm not dealing with this.
At least I'm not that guy.
Yes.
That's a great recommendation. All right. I'm also recommending a book, not for parents, but for kids, a picture book called The Pilot and the Little Prince by Peter Cease. Peter Cease is a 3-time Caldecott winner, illustrator, and author, a beautiful artist who makes really, really great children's books. He made a really great one about Galileo called Starry Messenger, a bunch of other really good ones. This one, The Pilot and the Little Prince, is the life of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the author of The Little Prince, who, as you may know, had a very eventful life. He flew in World War II for the Air Force. He crashed his plane about a zillion times. The story of The Little Prince is based on his own experience after crashing his plane into the desert. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful book, very thought-provoking for kids. And I've really enjoyed watching both my daughters, actually, of varying reading levels, just sort of get lost in this book over the last few weeks because they're big, beautiful multi-page spreads that the littler one just loves looking at. And then the writing also is quite beautiful, and it's a really great telling of that story. And you can also, if you're interested in learning more about this book, you can read a really, really great conversation between Cease and his editor on the Slate Book Review. We will link to it on our show page. Once again, it's called The Pilot and the Little Prince by Peter Cease. It's really great. All right. So that's our show. Please email us at momanddad@slate.com to suggest topics or recommend books or guests or whatever. And if you've got a question, please give us a call at any hour and leave us a message at 424-255-ROOD. Please subscribe on iTunes. Just search for Mom and Dad Are Fighting. You can leave a comment or a rating. That helps people find the show. It also pushes down the comment from that guy who described us as entertaining in a John and Kate plus 8 kind of way. So please subsume that comment under other comments. And again, please tell your friends about the show. Our producer is Chris Wade. The executive producer of Slate Podcast is Andy Bowers. Thanks very much to our intern, Laura Smith, for great research and assistance on the show. Thank you very much to my special guest co-host today, Emily Yaffe. It was great having you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.